Welcome to Global Eat, the Global Eat and Travel Network featuring food connections to people and places. I'm Agnes Chung. From opium to coffee, the success of Doi Chang coffee brand has brewed an inspiring social enterprise that has profoundly impacted the Akha indigenous people of Thailand in a positive and meaningful way. Today we have a conversation with John Darch, founder of Doi Chang Coffee Company, on the Doi Chang story, how the company started, and how it changed the lives of Akha people of Thailand. Darch started out in commercial banking with UK NatWest and later Royal Bank of Canada. Moving on, he co-founded six public companies engaged in many natural resource projects spanning from North America, Africa to Asia. So what's the motivation behind supporting Doi Chang and how it all began?
I know when Mark Pendergrass was asking me questions as to why it was done. Was it like a rich man's guilt? Did I sort of rape and pillage the mining communities around the world and therefore you felt you had to give back? And it was none of that. I think it was the fact that it was at a certain time in my life when I could. Money was not the motivation. And that the individual I met there, Weecha Pramyong, and the lady who introduced me, Porn Prapa Munmuzik, who I'd known for about a decade before, neither of them had any personal interest in it. They didn't do it because of stature or because of reward. They did it for a desire to help the community improve their lives. And that just inspired me. And so one of the things that appealed to me at the very beginning was this selfless interest they had. There was no talk of money. There was no talk about, I'm going to have this position, you're going to have that position. It was always about, what can we do to help the Hill Tribe? And when I first met Weecha, Korn Prapa, who now has changed the name to Korn Krunuk, as all Thai people change their names, she had said to me, Khun John, because Khun is that sort of mystery. Khun John, you must meet this wonderful man. He has this idea of helping Hill Tribe move from opium to coffee. Wonderful coffee. But because relationships are so important in Asia, that I'd learned through Asia Pacific, etc., and I had a lot of respect for her, I said, sure, I'd meet this man. So it took me to his little office, and it was like a cubicle, like 9 by 9. No window, just the door. There were coffee sacks on the wall, and a pile of cushions. And we just sitting there, cross-legged. Shaved head, earring, little goatee beard, a sash around his waist. It was a cross between a hippie and a monk. And I went in and they brought a chair and they plonked a chair in front of Weecha for me to sit. And everybody else crouched down. And I had thought before, okay, I listen to the story, I give him some money, I feel good, you know, that's it. And he leaned forward and in perfect English said, would you like a beer? And totally disarmed. I said, oh, I thought you'd offer me coffee. And he said, no, I don't really like coffee, but I like what it does for my people. So immediately, it's taken away, and I'm intrigued. And he spent the next 3 or 4 hours talking to me about the Hill Tribe, about their migration from one country to another over 200 years, apolitical, lived within themselves, always moved along, moved from border to border, and ended up in effective isolation in the mountains in northern Thailand. Not wanted by the Thais, not Thai citizens, just left alone. And how they are so isolated and in such poverty, they had no future. And he had this vision. He was going to change them from opium to growing coffee. And I thought to myself, wow, you know, here's this guy.
Just so we know. Yeah.
He's not asking for any money. But just say, could I help? Mm-hmm. And so I said, okay, well, I'll go up and I'll meet them. Totally intrigued. And the first journey from Chiang Rai into Doi Chang was across muddy rivers, up muddy roads for about 4 or 5 hours. And here it is, he's got this little roasting facility up there. And I said, well, Sweetcha, I'll take some beans back to North America. And if they're not good coffee, not good quality coffee, even though he was assuring me they were the best, I said, I'll make a donation.
So, John, how did you find the quality of the beans?
So I brought the beans back. I took them to a roaster. I sent them to a guy called Ken Davis, who runs a coffee review, one of the largest independent reviews in North America. And they both came back and said, well, this is not Thai coffee. This is a high-grade Arabica coffee. Thai coffee is a low-grade Robusta. And I said, no, I know it's from Thailand. I brought it from the mountains. And the reality was, the coffee had never been known outside of the little small communities. So what they had was a coffee that rated the top 1% of coffees in the world, but never had exposure. So at this stage, I spoke to my son, who said, my dad, you've got to be insane, but it sounds interesting. You've done other crazy things in your life. And I said, okay, well, look, why don't we just give it a go? And so we went over there, and I said to him, well, it's got good coffee, and I think I can maybe help you. And so it was a matter of, at this time, what are we going to do? So the key here was to help the Hill Tribe people, not for me to start a business that was going to make a lot of money. And in that, it was, what would be best for the people? The clear thing I had from WeChat was that whenever they've had people visit them, the first thing it comes in, control. 51%, 52%.
What was your proposed deal?
And I said, well, WeChat, I don't want control. I just want the ability to buy the beans. You keep ownership, you keep control. And what we'll do is, there's a price called fair trade price, but we know fair trade price is only going to keep you poor. You know, fair trade price basically keeps you poor. It's better than not fair trade, but it basically you need to have more than that. And I said, we will actually pay you a premium, which at that time was about 100 or 200% more, because that was what was considered necessary for what they needed to make changes. And I said, in addition to that, we'll gift you half the Canadian company. And he looked at me, and he went back and he spoke to the elders, and they obviously they're looking at me, saying, well, he's got to be really drunk, this guy. You know, he's really crazy, he's drunk. And they came back and he said, are you sure? You're strong enough for this? I said, no promises. I said, but we have a deal. I trust you. We have a commitment to each other. You focus on quality and quantity, and you act as a cooperative. Nobody gets rich. The whole community gets rich. And I knew that was exactly his philosophy. He was so against corporations, major corporations, against the big companies who come and swallow the farmers. The agreement that they would have enough to change their lives, and the agreement that they would have half the Canadian company, was to give them dignity, to give them a sense of pride, that they weren't just green bean buyers. Because he realized, if you were ever going to elevate a farmer, you had to take them through full integration. That's why he was keen on roasting, packaging, and distributing. So that's how it all started. And then it elevated and grew and grew. And we saw the growth there in Thailand, where they have a large washing machines now. People are getting registered as Thai citizens, but they weren't before. They no longer have this fear of isolation and being deported. They have become part of the community. They're going to schools, they're getting educated, and they're running it themselves. The changes in Doi Chang in a decade have been as much as many civilizations took 100 years to change. Because what they've done is they've adopted and adapted to modern technology. A whole village of 8,000 to 10,000 people have changed forever. That change would never have happened without that investment.
Why the exotic name Doi Chang?
And the Doi Chang is such a unique story. And the growth was exactly the same as with Asia Pacific. At the beginning, people slammed the door. Doi Chang was Chinese tea. I said, no, Doi Chang is the name of the village.
Now, coffee business is a very competitive business. What do you envision for the future of Doi Chang?
You're absolutely correct. A very highly competitive business. And there has to be an understanding that if you want to have a high quality product, that actually it comes with a premium. And that's been a discussion I've had with people in the past who say, I love the story, I love what you're doing, but we don't want to pay the extra. My response is, well, if we don't pay the extra, then they remain poor, and then you don't have the quality of the coffee one. So it's a circle, as we said, poverty circle, etc., or it's a prosperity circle. I see as coffee moves forward that there's two branches here. There's one which is fundamentally high volume coffee where single estate Doi Chang, because of the pricing, would not be possible unless you're in a specialty store where people will recognize to pay more because they expect to get more. Then there will be maybe the majority of people who enjoy a coffee, they can recognize that there are some distinctive factors. And so Doi Chang has established some blends which have organic, fair trade coffee, good quality coffee, different taste, but it enables it to be a lower price range. So coffee is very competitive. As it goes forward, there are more and more, you know, companies that come on. And what I'm hoping is going to happen is the same thing, say, with breweries. You have the national breweries, and then the micro breweries go up. And I think the same thing with coffee. You'll always have the large base of people who drink coffee, and then you'll have people who say, no, I want to have a higher quality. I want to be able to see that what I'm paying for actually finds its way back to the farmers. And I'd say something very important. The younger generation really are driving, the millennials and other people. They no longer accept what a company or a corporation will tell them. They actually do inquire. They make inquiries to say, well, what is the reality? What is the truth behind this? And that, to me, reflects education, which was Weecha's belief, has always been my belief, and Juan Prabha's belief. Educate people. And where Doi Chang does well are in universities. Because in universities, young people actually do care. They don't just say, well, I want this because it's this price, that's it. They will actually look and see what's happening. So we are in several universities where the students have probably driven the food services people, probably gone both ways, food services people and the students, to have a higher grade coffee. So that's where Doi Chang does well.
Do you see the Doi Chang coffee model expanding to other villages in the area, which they already have, or to communities in other countries?
The answer is yes, but not in the same way. People have always felt that beyond fair trade meant that the farmers had to have 50%. And I've tried in vain to say no, it means that they actually get more than fair trade. They could have 10%, 20%, 70%, is whatever you choose as the model. Beyond fair trade does not mean 50% no, it just means you do more. So how's it worked in Thailand? Doi Chang was the established Thai coffee company. It was known everywhere. What's most pleasing is that surrounding Doi Chang, people who were members of that coffee community are now starting their own little coffee companies under different names. So it's a bit like dropping a stone in the middle of a pool. The ripple effect is going out there. Now, most corporations would say, oh, that's terrible, terrible. They shouldn't be doing their own. They should all come to us. The way that I view it, it's wonderful. It's like the young children are growing and growing. And so we have been requested, as my son, who is the vice president, general manager of Doi Chang, we've been requested to help other communities. will we go to a different location and help them set up? And our answer has been, we would never try to set up the same model because of the financial commitment and the dedication. I have no problem helping, no problem giving guidance, trying to help communities. And if other people want to try something like this, I'm very happy to talk to them.
What's your takeaway experience from this project?
There's more to life than money that I knew from when I was a child, from when I was growing up. There are certain times in your life when you can do it, depending on your personality and depending on your opportunities. So I've been privileged. I've been successful in what I've done. I've made money, I've lost money, but on balance I've probably made more than I've lost, which enabled me to do Deutsche Bank. So my takeaway from Deutsche Bank would be this, is that as I was told at school, make a decision. What do you want to do? Do you want an interesting life with challenges and rewards, or do you want an easy life? I believe that people who look at something like Deutsche Bank can be the same people who want to save the oceans, save the community, save the world, whatever you may choose to do. If you follow something with your passion and you do it with a recognition of your limitations, because you, for instance, if you wanted to save a particular part of the ocean, you have to have a location where you start. The concept may be global eventually, but start somewhere. And I think with the Deutsche Bank, I took away from that, here was something which appeared to be within my grasp of doing, because I was using my skills, but it was dependent on the other person, Richard, using his skills and working together. So my takeaway then, I suppose, is this, is that money's not the key. If you're going to develop something, do something with a passion, but do it with a team. One person does not do it all.
Awesome. Well, thank you very much, John.
My pleasure.